WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are going to be Los Angeles Positive, California Positive next week. I'm positively headed to Super Bowl. I did the math on this. It's 56, Luke. I added this up, 47 plus 9, and then 35 plus 22. Wow, right? You start to add these years up, and you're like, whoo, 35 and 26. That's 56? The Los Angeles Rams hosting at home, and the most unlikely thing we talked a lot about teams here all offseason, AFC chances. You can go bet on it now down at the casino. The Cincinnati Bengals, they were like 200-1 this time last year.
Yeah. I mean, I recall us at least mentioning them in passing and saying, hey, they have Joe Burrow. They have some good young players. and I thought they'd be better, but I mean, no one outside of Cincinnati. I don't think Bengals fans.
Cincinnati.
Yeah, exactly. But I guess, you know, if we're going to put a Baltimore slant on this, hey, there's hope yet for teams that wear orange and black, right? I mean, you think about where the Bengals were 2 years ago. I mean, they're 2-14. Think back to the season finale last year where the Ravens ran for 400 yards on this team. And I get it. No Joe Burrow. And you know, they add Hendrickson. They add some other players in free agency to bolster that defense that played really well in the second half on Sunday. But no one saw this coming. And this is why we love sports, right? I mean, as much as we expect certain things to happen, you expected over the last two decades, you came to expect Tom Brady and the Patriots being there. Every once in a while, something like this does happen. And I mean, you have to give the Bengals a heck of a lot of credit. I mean, that game through the first 29 minutes couldn't have looked more lopsided in favor of the Kansas City Chiefs. And then it completely changed at the end of that first half. Kansas City doesn't get in at the goal line. They squander at least 3 points. You know, you're thinking they could get 7 there. And it was a totally different game after that. And
by the way, what is it about modern sports? I mean, it used to be the outlier that the Oilers would blow a 35-3 lead. I mean, the Brady coming back in the Super Bowl against the Falcons, that'll never be forgotten. That's on the side of their ring. But these really big comebacks, I mean, Mahomes did it a couple of years ago in the playoffs, right? Like these crazy 3-4 touchdown. Well, we got to get down 28-3 before we start playing. And then all of a sudden it's 35-34. And you're like, how did this happen? It used to be when you were losing 28-3, you go die in the corner and you go away. I remember some playoff games. You're a little young, but there were some games in the early 90s that like Marino's last playoff game, then they lost like 61-7. I mean, like things really get away. They go the complete opposite way. Once it starts to become a blowout, it gets to 49-3 real quick. Modern football's been different in that way just over the last 10 years where a couple 3 touchdowns, you're down 21-3. You can come back. The Ravens have come back. I mean, Lamar's come back this year from that. It's an interesting part of the modern part of football, but it's also, I guess, the rules, flags, pass interference, things that be explosives, as Coach Billick, our partner, would say, that can get you back into a game. But it's not as weighted as it used to be where a 3-touchdown lead sounded like 21 points or 24 points in this case with 2-point conversions. It always feels like with a 2-point and with these offenses that 3 touchdowns doesn't make you leave, doesn't make you get in the car and show taillights.
Yeah, it shouldn't. And you just said it. I was getting ready to say the rule changes. And I don't say that to be cynical about the Bengals or when Mahomes did it against Houston a couple years ago. You know, that was an earlier lead, but you know, you still look at the points. It's just crazy. You know, we all remember 28-3, but that's the difference. I mean, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, that's why what Joe Montana did. And I've been recently watching the documentary that Peacock, you know, the streaming service, NBC streaming service, has put out on him. But you think about all of his comebacks, and now that wouldn't feel as impressive right now. And I say that as a kid who idolized Joe Montana in an era where Baltimore didn't even have a team. But it really is crazy. But it speaks to the rules. I mean, 30 years ago, if you had to pass, and specifically you had to pass over the middle, you know, what we saw happen to Debo Samuel in the NFC Championship over the middle, it was a clean hit, but he got the wind knocked out of him like crazy. That was commonplace in the game 20 or 30 years ago. So that's the idea. If you're down 3 touchdowns and you're needing to do that, then that defense is just teeing off. I mean, we think back to the late 90s, early 2000s Ravens, you know, with the physicality they had on that defense. So it is a different game in that way. But that said, I think Roger Goodell and the owners and anyone who has a vested interest loves the fact that you see these comebacks, because people aren't going to turn it off. They're not going to go turn on a college basketball game if one team's up three scores in the conference championship. So, it was really entertaining. I mean, even the late game, which, you know, we didn't see anyone run away, but the 49ers led by two scores in the fourth quarter. Kind of reminded you of them against the Chiefs in the Super Bowl 2 years ago in that way. But again, I keep coming back to the Bengals, and I feel for we'll see about the rest of the league. For the Ravens, I think you watch this. First of all, I think it's tough to hate the Bengals in the way that you hate the Steelers, and times that the Pittsburgh's been there and the Ravens are watching at home, it's a much different
put
element.
The Colts in there too. Put the Patriots in it.
Sure.
Well, it was easy to hate all those teams.
But I'll say this though, Nestor, in 2001, everyone was rooting for the Patriots, right? Because you kind of think about where they were. I think about the Patriots, especially pre-Drew Bledsoe, as a kid who grew up in the late 80s, early 90s. Yeah, the Patriots weren't, they weren't the Bengals kind of bad, but they were very forgettable. They were not a franchise that
I was dating a Patriots fan. Because I'm going out to LA next week. I was nationally syndicated. I had a girlfriend in LA who was a Patriot fan. She was from New England, and she was long suffering. This was in 2000 when we won the Super Bowl, when Trent Dilfer, I got a card from her. She said, maybe one day my Patriots will win. You know what I mean? And to think of where those last 21 years have been, when Brady stepped in right around that period of time, when I was nationally syndicated, me and Baldinger, Bledsoe went away, all of that stuff. It's amazing that he was still playing this week. It's amazing that he upscaled or upstaged the retirement thing on Saturday, whether he's retired or not retired. But Joe Burrow has this it factor about him that should really concern us in Pittsburgh and Cleveland, because I don't think he's going anywhere.
Well, and that's the big thing. You think about it in terms of how the NFL viewed the Patriots in 2001, and it's like, okay, if it's a one-time shot, and you never know. As much as I think there's going to be a tendency, in the same way many people tried to cope with the Ravens 2 years ago, losing Lamar's first full year, MVP, 14-2, all that, a lot of people said what? They were, quote, ahead of schedule, whatever that means. But I clearly that sentiment exists right now for the Bengals, but there is that sense of, You need to seize the moment. You need to strike while the iron's hot, because we've seen what's happened to the Ravens the last 2 years. And it doesn't mean they've gone away, but you go through adversity. You have injuries. You have some unforeseen circumstances that can derail your championship hopes. So it'll be interesting. I think right now, for many Ravens fans, other than Eli Apple, the Bengals corner who's been obnoxious on Twitter and going after players, and it's like he's not very good, so why is this guy talking? But other than that, I think there's a sentiment right now that this is kind of a really good story, but that can quickly shift from the 2001 Patriots were an underdog great story. And then they became the Yankees for the next two decades after that. So that's where
it gets beaten around. But the Bengals had a lot of good teams. You know, when you look at Marvin's years, that they had that period where Carson Palmer were for 3 years, very, very good. And then the period with Andy Dalton, they were better than us most years, and we weren't bad. So it's not like they've been complete dregs, but not winning a playoff game for 30 years and not really being thought of, I think, in that. I tweeted, I didn't know they were allowed to go to the Super Bowl. Like, it doesn't even register to me that they can do this, that they can be allowed to play in the Super Bowl.
Well, think about this, and I may have mentioned this the previous week, but the last time the Bengals were in the Super Bowl was roughly 5 or 6 weeks after the Orioles traded Eddie Murray to the Dodgers. I mean, think about that. I mean, it might as well be 100 years ago. I mean, that's how long that feels. I actually had a chance to watch the game on Sunday with one of my best friends going back to elementary school. We hadn't even met each other at that point in time. You know, I mean, we were five, 6 years old at that point in time.
I had just bought a big screen TV. You know, it was like 1989. I had just had enough money. Like, the only thing in life I wanted was to watch the Super Bowl on a big screen TV.
Yeah.
And it was the first Super Bowl I saw on a big screen, and Taylor, and I lived on Kane Street. I was working at the paper. I was interviewing rock stars. I was hanging out at Hammerjacks. I had long hair back in the day, you know? So that was my 1980s hey, man, and the Bengals for being in this division all of these years and having been in our way a little bit, it is amazing we don't have any disdain for them. You know what I mean? Sort of like if you're an Oriole fan, you might not like the Blue Jays based on what happened in, you know, in 89 or whatever's a long time ago, but you wouldn't hate on the Blue Jays. You'd hate on the Yankees and Red Sox. The Blue Jays are benign. Why you get the Rays? Why are you gonna be mad at them? The Bengals feel that way, although the Rays have quickly become the best team in baseball, and we better watch ourselves, to your point, over the next 5 years, because at 2-14 and drafting Burrow and saying, all right, what is his schedule in all of this? It wasn't second year after an injury. I mean, we're not even to the point where we can name most of their players. You know, I still think all the old guys, the Carlos Dunlops, are still running around out there, right?
Geno Atkins plug in the middle. Yeah, I mean, it really –
Where's
it really,
Pac-Man?
and by the way, Carlos Dunlap and Geno Atkins, I mean, they were very recently with them. It's not as though this is 10 years later we're talking about that.
We're not talking like Rob Burnett and Michael McCrary, right?
Exactly. I mean, that's what's wild, and that's why I said, I mean, this whole notion of – development being linear, and you take these steps, and okay, you make the playoffs, and then okay, you lose in the divisional round, and then you get to the I mean, does that still happen on occasion? Sure. Is that the norm, though, especially in the salary cap era? Not really.
By the way, that's why you would love hockey if you were ever a hockey fan. I mean, in basketball, Steph Curry wins or LeBron wins. In football, it's always Tom Brady or, you know, hockey is one of those you get on a groove. Like the Bengals, or like maybe the Colorado Rockies did that one year when they went to the World Series. There's been a little bit of that in baseball where, you know, you can groove your way in, wild carding and all that. But by and large, most of these major sports, chalk wins, favorite wins. You know what I mean? It's not built for the Cincinnati Bengals or the Tampa Bay Rays in most cases.
Yeah, but you see one of these turnarounds. I mean, I think back to being a kid, the Cowboys were 1-15, and what, 3 years later, they're back in the playoffs. 4 years later, they're winning the Super Bowl. I mean, at that point in time, and remember, that's pre-free agency. That's pre-thinking about the salary cap in the way that we do now. But
it was even before we knew Herschel Walker was a fascist.
Yeah, right. Or we knew that trading Herschel Walker for all those draft picks was actually genius. So
hey, the USFL's coming back. I mean, Tommy Conwell always says the 80s are coming back. I saw a USFL logo the other night and I thought, oh man, are they going to pitch me that in LA next week?
Yeah, talking about the Baltimore Stars and in Philly and playing at Bird State, like that whole thing, which I don't really have memories of that. I was a little before
last time the Bengals are relevant.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's wild. And I think the crazy, going back to what you just said, as far as, you know, how anyone could have possibly thought this was in the cards for the Bengals. I mean, even go back to where they were the day after Christmas, the Ravens go there. I mean, yeah, the Ravens had a JV roster with their injuries and the COVID situation at that point in time. And the Bengals just completely crush them. And look, I gave them credit from the standpoint of they really showed a killer instinct in that game. And I know some Ravens fans were mad that they were still throwing late in the game. And, you know, it's kind of like, well, the Ravens were doing that to teams 2 years ago. Maybe not throwing, but meaning they were still steamrolling. And look, you play the games. But do I think I'm not suggesting that was the pivotal moment for them. But I think you started to view them in a different way when they didn't just beat the Ravens in week 16. They crushed them. And then they beat Kansas City, and you're saying, okay, this isn't January, but it's still late December and it's early January, you know, end of the regular season, and they're winning games that they need to win. And they did it in a fairly convincing fashion. That's where you kind of wondered, okay, can this team not just show up in the playoffs the way they did with Andy Dalton or Carson Palmer, as you mentioned, which, you know, that if he doesn't have that knee injury, what, Kimo von Ohlhoff and falling into his knee, who knows what happens to the Bengals and Marvin Lewis at that point in time, but you know, that's 15
years
ago. Well, he
went to Arizona and played really well too, kind of quietly.
Yeah, sure, sure.
Carson Palmer was a really good player and probably didn't have the pieces around him, certainly didn't have the confidence level. I mean, he literally just dropped the microphone and rolled out on Marvin in Cincinnati. He was kind of like a squirrel about it after they gave him all, you know, this would be Lamar 4 years from now saying, I don't want to be in Baltimore anymore. That's kind of where Palmer was based on their ownership. And how about fire Mike Brown? And Mike Brown sucks and the Bengals suck. And I mean, this is me and Angelos. And, you know, I had said to you all along back during the Buck era, I was writing to Peter Principles when Jen got sick. Then they started playing good baseball. I said, I would love to have the Peter Principles end with a final chapter where Angelos finally gets a Super Bowl and wins. Mike Brown's been looking for that final chapter for 50 years, man.
Well, and the final chapter just might be Joe Burrow. The factoid I saw shortly after the game on Sunday, there has never been a quarterback who has, one, won the Heisman Trophy, two, won a national championship for his collegiate team, and won a Super Bowl. And this guy is now a win away from doing that in a three-year period. I mean, that's just, it's astonishing. And it's a credit to him. It is a credit to some of the roster building they did around him. You know, they made some good free agent signings to improve that defense. I still think that they're another good offensive lineman away from being in a position to sustain this and do this long term, because he still gets hit too much. And I think as we start talking about this game coming up in a couple weeks, one of the big stories is going to be, how does the Bengals offensive line keep the Rams defensive line at bay? I mean, I just think that's going to be a big challenge. I mean, we saw what the Titans did against them. And even though they won, still don't want your quarterback being sacked eight times. I mean, it's just not.
Donald creates a unique thing in the middle, and Von Miller and
Ramsey. I mean, you have Hall of Famers there.
The Rams are in modern Yankees. They're built to win right here, right now. They don't have draft picks. I mean, right. The Rams went all in on winning this Super Bowl, and they got there, and now, you know, they're favored, right? They have to be favored, right?
Yeah, they're favored. I think I saw the early line was, you know, by maybe it might have been 3.5. I'll try
everything
to double check that.
2.5 and 3.5 before I looked last week to see exactly. And it'll fall out where it is. I mean, they're at home. They've got the veteran quarterback, although, you know, Matt Stafford's been playing in big football games for like 2 weeks now. And it's fair, fine. And look, I thought Garoppolo was going to win. I mean, when they had the lead, I thought this is Bengals Niners for the third time in my lifetime, right? Go back to Ken Anderson and the first time around in the snowstorm in Pontiac. And I remember watching that with my pop on the couch over in Bank. You remember every Super Bowl, don't you? I mean, I feel like I've been at all of them the last 25 years, but the ones I remember the most are the ones I sat on my couch with my dad and watched. And I really thought that the Niners were going to be the better team on Sunday. The better team. And the other part of that is how the Rams really have no fans. Like I'm going to go out there and say, hey, the Rams are in the Super Bowl. They've waited. They never wanted a team. The people in LA didn't want one team, let alone two. Now they got a team. It's good. It's expensive. They're over in Inglewood, and everybody showed up. Like, I'm wearing my Coons Ford red today. It was a referendum on Rams fandom, right? In that way to say, are they coming? And I would think the Bengals fans are going to go out there and have a good time. I think if Bengals fans want to go out to LA, they'll have some space. They'll be able to probably get a ticket, because I don't know that the world is converging upon this Super Bowl at this time. I don't think the Rams have this built-in fan base that wants to spend 10 grand on tickets. And I don't think the Bengals do either, by the way. I've always felt like, and this is, I'll poop on the Bengals all week next week about this. And I'll even throw Marvin in on this. I've gone to Cincinnati. Well, I mean, 27 years, I've been there 24 of the 27 years. Yeah, I haven't gone to every game, but I went to the old Riverfront for one back in the day when Stokely caught a pass during the streak. And I'll say this, they've never filled their stadium. They've never been a robust fan base. I've often driven around out in the suburbs. I mean, I've always had a car when I'm in Cincinnati. I've driven in from Louisville. I've driven in from Indianapolis. I've been around the suburbs. I've had chili three ways, four ways, five ways, five alarm, cheese on top, the little noodles, no beans in the meat, all of that. They felt like one of the lightest fan bases in all of the league and all the places I ever go consistently. There are ups and downs for the Tampas and the Carolinas and the Miamis and some of these franchises that don't have what we have had here for a generation, or Pittsburgh or the Giants or some of these organizations where it's just sold out. There's a lot of fans. It's always the home fans. They don't let the other fans in. For the most part, it's been that way for a generation. Cincinnati was always one of those places where I thought, are they ever going to build this thing? They've been here 50 years. Are they ever going to own the hearts of the people in Cincinnati? And they never really have, to my way of thinking. And this is that opportunity for them. So for that, I applaud them. I mean, I've often felt like they should be a bigger deal in Cincinnati than they are. And the football, the college team doing well there. The Bearcats kind of eat at that a little bit. There's a large Bear Bearcats community in Cincinnati that we're really not familiar with in a place like Baltimore. You know what I mean? That they eat up a lot of that fan base there. I hope this gets the Bengals square, and I hope one day to walk in their stadium and not see empty seats, because I've been seeing it for 25 years. They're a poorly supported franchise.
Well, you mentioned Cincinnati. Don't forget about Louisville. That's, you know, that you have that as well. And I mean, a certain guy named Lamar Jackson being there recently. So there's that. I mean, it's not Cincinnati's not a gigantic place. So you have that. I mean, it's not as though you're drawn into a huge market there. But I would also say this, and I think this is where it's a little more relatable when you think back to, you know, talking about Orioles attendance 2012 through 2016, and you know, it was okay at times and bad at other times, even though the team was decent. There was a long history there of them being lousy. And I think when you're in that position and you're Charlie Brown, who's had the ball pulled away by Lucy so many times in the way they did, even under Marvin, they never won a playoff game. Look, Marvin did a nice job for that organization for a long time compared to where they were in the 90s and the early 2000s before he arrived. But I think there's that proverbial waiting for the other shoe to drop, right? I mean, that there's just that sense. What's going to go wrong? Carson Palmer's knee or Vontaze Burfict acting like an idiot against the Steelers. I mean, there was always that for them. So I think there is a part of that. And you know, I think the difference, though, is, and we've seen that here locally. I mean, you're talking about even Joe Flacco, who won a Super Bowl. But let's face it, the post-Super Bowl 47 era for those 5 years was underwhelming for a lot of reasons. You know, they won one playoff game. They missed the playoffs in 2013, 15, 16, 17. You know, that's for the Ravens, that was a pretty long drought.
And the Bengals were the ones beating them in week 17 in a lot
correct,
of years.
Correct. But I would say we remember some of the apathy that was at work there. And while attendance didn't fall off dramatically, there were noticeable empty seats in the stadium. You wrote about it, I know. But what happened? You get this transcendent, really exciting, unique quarterback in Lamar Jackson, and the enthusiasm picked up dramatically over a really short period of time. And I think that's the difference right now. And time will tell. You have to sustain this. You know, I mean, I think as much as there's a tendency, like I said, to think you're ahead of schedule, go ask Steve Smith if he thought the Carolina Panthers would be back when they went in 2003. Doesn't always happen that way.
Cal Ripken, I was bringing that
right
up.
No question. Dan Marino in 84, I mean, insane numbers for that time period. He never got back. So I think it's really it's going to be important because of the reasons you just laid out, really important for the Bengals to seize this moment and, you know, to try to go win a Super Bowl. I don't think the Rams are unbeatable. I mean, the Rams are going to be a 3.5-point favorite. They're home, all that. But, you know, this Bengals team has something on their side, because for Patrick Mahomes to play the way he did in the second half, after seeing what he's done for the better part of the last 4 years, it's hard not to look at them and just say, wow, maybe this just is their year. So, we'll see what happens in 2 weeks. But it's a heck of a story, and you hope the people of Cincinnati appreciate it. And they deserve it from that standpoint. They've never been jerks, you know, in the way that Ravens hate the Steelers or even Browns fans for that matter. So from that standpoint, I'll be rooting for them, because I just think it's a wild story. But again, underdog can become the Yankees or the Patriots pretty quickly, or think of the Red Sox at 04 going to what they became. So I think it'll be fun to see how this plays out, and a challenge for the Ravens moving forward, that's for sure.
Luke will be no stranger this week. We have press conferences, defensive coordinators, coaches, 3 weeks later than they're allegedly what the rules say. So my first question to John Harbaugh will be, why do you break the rules about press conferences? John Harbaugh, Eric DaCosta, Mike McDonald will all be heard from this week. Luke will be out in Owings Mills via Zoom, no doubt. And it's all brought to you by our friends at Royal Farms, real fresh, real fast. Our wise conversations continue. We're moving them to the West Coast all next week. Super Bowl 56 coverage brought to you by our friends at Coons, as well as the Maryland Lottery. We're letting ourselves play. We are WNSD, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.